From the Centre for Public Christianity, you're listening to Life and Faith. I'm Natasha Moore.
And I'm Simon Smart.
You may have heard us talking about a documentary that we at CPX are working on. It's going to be called For the Love of God, How the Church is Better and Worse Than You Ever Imagined. Basically, we're diving into the history of Christianity in the West and unpacking how it's influenced our society and culture. For example, we're looking at how the human rights movement finds its roots in a Christian understanding of the world, and why Christians have been involved in social justice work, like feeding the hungry or alleviating poverty.
Yes, and it's important to say that we're not shying away from the darker parts of Christian history, when Christians have abused their power, exploited and oppressed people, the times when Christianity has really done the opposite of everything it's supposed to.
We've been speaking to a lot of people for this documentary. Some you've probably heard of, like John Lennox, the novelist Marilyn Robinson, former Archbishop of Canterbury, Rowan Williams. We've had some pretty fabulous conversations, actually. Or rather, you have, Simon. You've been lucky enough to do most of these interviews.
Yes. It's been exhausting travelling around the world talking to these eminent people. Someone's got to do it, though. And we've been sort of learning a lot, actually, in the process in terms of research for the documentary. So rather than keeping them to ourselves until the release of the documentary, we thought we'd share some of their insights here on Life and Faith, a sneak peek, or a listening party, if you will.
This month, we're going to examine one theme or topic from the documentary each week. So next week, we cover the Crusades. We're not going to shrink from the controversial issues. Then we'll move on to women's rights, and we'll wrap up Doco Month looking at the history of slavery and human value. But this week, we want to begin the series with a very broad brush. We're going to take a look more generally at the influence that Christianity has had on the West and whether and where it has a continuing presence in 21st century public life. So to do this, we're starting with Nick Spencer, who works at the Theos think tank in London and who's just published a new book.
I don't want to exaggerate the vital significance of this book. You know, you could probably live a relatively contented life without reading this book. You know, it's not going to ultimately transform you from some kind of chrysalis into a butterfly.
It might.
Well
let's not undersell it.
That was Nick telling me about his new book. It's called The Evolution of the West, How Christianity Has Shaped Our Values. Don't let him fool you, though. The book came out last month and it's a great read, an important read. It's a bit of a coincidence that he's been writing this book right at the time that we've been making a documentary on the same question of how Christianity has shaped the world we live in for better or for worse. I guess this seems to both of us like a pretty crucial topic for the moment that Western culture is in.
Nick Spencer, it's lovely to talk to you. Your book, The Evolution of the West, How Christianity Has Shaped Our Values. It sounds like you're trying to speak into a problem that exists today and try and perhaps offer a corrective. Is that what's going on here?
I think that's a fair way of putting it. Yes, I suppose I'm trying to speak into the problem of amnesia, the idea that the world as we know it actually emerged in 1968 or, you know, in 1698 or at some point in the past, and that everything before that, the Christian bit, is something we've escaped from. That's not the true story, and that's what I'm trying to address in this book.
Yeah, and so what do you think are the most problematic misunderstandings about Christianity's role in that foundational sense?
The most problematic one is that Christianity is the nightmare from which we're trying to escape, and it's Voltaire and Kant who did it for us. That's not true. There's a slightly less egregious version of that, which is that what went beforehand was largely immaterial and indifferent, maybe not actively unhelpful, but certainly not relevant. And if you want to understand the modern world, they go back to 1815, say, or perhaps 1914. Any moment in history is only the most recent moment and sits on top of layer upon layer upon layer of ideas and beliefs and commitments and practices and habits and institutions that have enabled that particular moment to be what it is. Christianity has been absolutely foundational. Now, it hasn't been the whole story by any means. It hasn't always been used on the side of the political or the cultural or the economic angels. But to think you can understand the present, let alone the past, do you think you can understand our idea of rights, democracy, human dignity, the scientific revolution, even the welfare state, without understanding Christianity, you're making a big mistake.
But why does that matter for the modern person who's going about their life and they're sort of enjoying or not the sort of society that they're living in? Why does it really matter that they know something of their past? And as a society, why does it matter?
George Orwell famously once wrote that he who controls the present controls the future, and he who controls the past controls the present. If you want a good grasp of who you are as an individual in some ways, but certainly who we are as a society in the West, you need to have some idea of where we've come from. What are the commitments and the ideas that have formed the Western worldview? If we are totally amnesiac about our past, A, we're being dishonest, and B, we are giving a kind of malleability to the future that really isn't there and is actually quite worrying. The future should in some sense be a continuity with who we are and where we've been. And so writing out our Christian pasts is not only bad history and slightly dishonest, it gives us a bit of a carte blanche for the future. Those societies that have sought to forget the past and rewrite the future, as many did in the 20th century, tend to do so at significant human cost. And that's why paying proper attention to the complex role that Christianity has played in that, I think is intellectually honest. It's important for where we're going. But apart from anything else, it's just quite interesting.
Yeah, and what do you suspect are, therefore, some of the, let's just pick up one or two, key foundational contributions of Christianity that everyone can be glad of?
I think probably the most important, identifiable, recognisable thing that people can be grateful for Christianity is when they look in the mirror in the morning. What are you seeing there? It is by no means self-evident. You don't have a barcode on you that tells you how much you're worth. You don't have a barcode on you that tells you anything about your intrinsic identity. The idea of who the human is, a someone rather than a something, a someone irrespective of the fact they may not be able to afford a mirror to look into in the morning. They are not self-evident ideas. And it was the incursion of Christianity into what we call now the classical world that brought about ideas that in engaging with human beings, you are in some way engaging with a bit of God, with an image of God. And from that basic argument, you can slowly build up ideas of rights or democracy or rule of law. And from those and from attendant ideas, you can pick up ideas of science and the proper role of the state, all of which, most of which, we take for granted today. But they weren't self-generating. And ultimately, I think they can be traced back to this Christian idea that the human is of inalienable worth.
You're listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. If you've just joined us, we're kicking off Doco Month. Every week for the month of October, we'll be featuring interviews from our upcoming documentary, For the Love of God, How the Church is Better and Worse Than You Ever Imagined. This week, Simon's chatting with Nick Spencer from Theos Think Tank in London.
Do you detect, and is this part of your motivation in writing the book, that this understanding is being lost? And if so, what might be the sort of danger of that continuing?
There is some sense that this Christian understanding of human dignity, inviolable human dignity, and what it means might be being lost. There are two really important caveats here. The first is that it's very easy to get apocalyptic about this. And under no circumstances do I want people to read the book and think, oh my goodness me, unless we all turn back to church next week, we're going to hell in a handcart. That is not what I'm saying. The second point is there, I'm talking about, if you like, deep sea intellectual currents. These things change over centuries, not decades, let alone years or so. So if we see any change in Western culture because of a drifting away from Christianity, it won't be within my lifetime. I know I'm still kind of young and vigorous, I like to think anyway. So there are very important caveats. But in things such as, and you tend to see it around the beginning and end of life debates, and I don't particularly want to gravitate to those, but that's kind of where you see them. In the idea that the human life can be determined by the value that the human puts on that life, or in the case of the very young and the unborn, that somebody else puts on that life, You are moving away from the idea that that life is valuable irrespective of what you think about it. I don't see that leading towards a gas chamber. That is emphatically not what I'm saying here. But I do think you need to pay careful attention to that view of human life. I don't want to major on, you know, abortion and euthanasia for various reasons. They're very sensitive pastoral issues apart from anything else. Nor do I want to give any impression that our moving away from a Christian conception of the human is going to, you know, lead us to some very grim situation almost instantly. But it's always worth attending to the way in which we engage with those who are at the periphery or perhaps at the weakest points of our society, those who are not able to defend themselves or articulate their own worth. And that, I think, probably in the longer term, is my greatest concern about drifting away from this Christian conception of the human.
As the book gets out there, what do you sort of hope might be the way it's received and the difference it might make?
I self-evidently hope the book is received positively. I hope it tells people things they didn't know beforehand. I hope it broadens minds and horizons. And I hope it reforms, or at least informs, people's idea of how Christianity has shaped an evolving West. Now, that's not going to redirect the future. It shouldn't do. Books don't work like that. But going back to that Orwell idea, it helps us have a better idea of where we are. And that, in itself, will give us a better idea of where we should be going.
Well, Nick Spencer, it's another really great contribution of yours. Good luck with the book, and thanks for speaking with us.
Thank you. Great pleasure. Thank you.
Nick Spencer's book is The Evolution of the West, How Christianity Has Shaped Our Values, and it's available now.
But before we go, I want to play a section from earlier in my interview with Nick, because he explains really well this idea of how Christianity has influenced Western culture and society for better and for worse. It's not a simple case of it's been a terrible influence and held us back, or it's all sweetness and light. So I asked him about some examples of the complexity of this history, and here's what he had to say about Christianity and democracy.
It's really important not to exaggerate the positive impact that Christianity had on the evolution of democracy. But here's a nice little story. William Tyndale, the earliest and greatest English reformer, about as anti-democratic a thinker as you could get, and this is by the standards of the 16th century, and there weren't many Democrats around then, wrote one book of political theology called The Obedience of the Christian Man, and it pretty much does what it says on the tin. The way to respond to authority is to obey it. But Tyndale, the political authoritarian, was also Tyndale the evangelical. And Tyndale the evangelical gave his life to putting an accessible, readable, and he genuinely is amazingly readable copy of the New Testament in the vernacular, in the hands of everybody, no matter who they were. And we mean everybody, not just rich men, but women, which was a risky thing to do, ploughboys, tradesmen, that kind of thing. And in doing so, he radically undermined the political authoritarianism. Because it's like me giving you a copy of the UN Declaration of Human Rights or Magna Carta or the Bill of Rights or whatever it is and saying to you, read it yourself, inwardly digest, think about what it means for you and for society. So not surprisingly, within a couple of years of Henry's government officials chaining up vernacular Bibles in churches across England, they were passing legislation which was saying actually the wrong kind of people mustn't read them. And the argument that Christian reformers, and there were some Christian democratic reformers 200-300 years later made, was that if God trusts us with the scriptures, with our spiritual destiny, why not trust us also with our political destiny? So that's a great example of how Christianity has in fact been a friend and a foe of democracy. Ultimately, its friendly face undermined its critical face.
From the Centre for Public Christianity, you've been listening to Life and Faith with Natasha Moore and Simon Smart. We hope you enjoyed part one of Doco Month. Keep listening each week as we explore specific areas of Christian influence on the West.
Also, if you want to make sure you don't miss any of these conversations, you can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. Just type CPX in the search box to find us. And while you're there, feel free to leave us a rating and a review. It'd be a great help to us.
Join us next week. We're going to be thinking about the history, the horror, and some of the myths of the Crusades.